I figure the best thing to do is if I carried around a lot of actual living dragons, people would probably get that shit on lockdown.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're working up to it.
Who's going to mispronounce shit if you have, like, living...
You've got a dragon, yeah.
Hello, my friends and loves, and welcome to this episode of Fantastically Strange. As always, I am Rocket Fox, your delightful and strange host, and I am here today with another interview, and I am so thrilled, so delighted, and so incredibly, incredibly honored
to have here Dash Kwiatkowski,
who is amazing, an amazing human being, and someone that I had the incredible privilege and honor recently to meet through a podcast that we were both on that is not actually this one. It wasn't like going back in time and meeting and then going back forward through time, even though that would make an awesome story.
It wasn't on the secret episode. It wasn't on the secret one of these. No. Yeah, that's so many nice things you said about me. I don't know if I agree with all those things. It's very sweet of you,
though. They're true. Yes, would you like to share with our wonderful people about yourself?
My name is Dash Kwiatkowski. I'm on all of the social media with that. Good luck spelling it. It'll be in the title or whatever, I'm sure. I'm a performer. I'm a podcaster, and I've done stand-up comedy for 10 years. This is too long, and I don't recommend that. And I write and I make stuff, and I play competitive Pokemon. And that's
the best kind.
That's who I. Yeah, no, it's wild because you go online and you think you did a pretty good one, and then you get destroyed by someone who's probably like 8, and you're like, that's cool. This feels good. I'm happy about where my life is right now. No, I mostly just make content. That's capital C content. But yeah, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here and talk about weird stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it is the pleasure is surely mine. And as a reminder to everyone, if you are interested in seeing these gorgeous faces that you are hearing right now, the video for this is going to be up on the Patreon. So you can head on over to patreon.com/rocketfox to see all of the weirdness that goes on. And by weirdness, I mean beautifulosity. Elsewise, just take a listen, open your ear holes and let these dulcet tones in.
I didn't know that the video was going to be part. I'll sit up straight. I'm traditionally a lounger. I got this pink gamer chair for gaming. And
no, let the lounging overtake you. I got my leg up too, just to.
Okay.
Just to
all right. Okay. In. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. No. I mean, we cannot as queer people sit in the chair as it was designed. That's the rule.
It's a rule.
Yeah.
I saw on. I don't remember the name of it. As I scroll through Facebook and all of the other places that just assault my face with ads all day long, every day. There's a chair now that like the sides fold down, the back folds down and like snaps in half and folds different ways. So you can sit on it in a myriad of ways. And I think it was built for us.
All right. Yeah. I'm open to the queer chair. I don't know, although there's something that feels right about sitting in a chair wrong. Do you know what I mean? There's something that feels correct about misusing a chair, I guess.
It is. It feels like a hug, a strange, uncomfortable hug.
Yeah.
No, my gaming chair is green and falling apart beneath me. So I'm just waiting for it to just snap in half and just hit the floor at some point. And I'm going to be real sad when that happens because it's probably gonna hurt a lot.
Yeah, no, that won't feel great. It'll go to the big gaming convention in the sky for that gaming chair, where they all end up. I just tried to get one that was, because like the vast majority of gaming chairs look so bad. Like they don't they look so bad. And I just wanted one. I like the color scheme on yours. I wanted one that was like as far away from the like weird blue that they make all of them for some reason. The weird like
a mix of cobalt, sea blue, robin's egg, and just like punch you in the eyeball.
It is the color of like artificial blue raspberry. Like it's a very specific. Yeah, it's not a good.
Oh, I tasted that.
It's not a good. Yeah, no, it's not a good eyeball feel or mouth feel. So I just wanted the pinkest one that I could find. I found a pretty good pink one. It came with like a little back massager thing that is not good. No, it's bad. But but it's lumbar support, I guess. And also like sitting in this, I do feel like it's good for the back. I do feel like it's like better for my very terrible all the time back. So that's, you know, it's all good. It's all good stuff. It's all good things in the gaming chair.
It's really cute. I would love to have a pink one. I'll tell you what. Mine's a little big for me. I always run into stuff because I don't have a lot of space. So I'm knocking things over constantly. And it feels dangerous. I feel like I'm going to impale myself one of these days on something.
You just got to make sure you don't game too hard. That's the main thing with the gaming chairs. The fear is gaming too hard.
How do we not, though? As people who are gamers and also
as gamers,
that aggressive Korean blood flowing through their veins, how do you not game so hard?
Sometimes you just gotta game very hard,
just so angry, so hard and angry.
You ever stop and think about how words don't mean anything anymore? Do you ever just get caught up in that sort of
that happens to me when I'm spelling things sometimes. I'll spell a word and I get caught up as I'm spelling it. And as I'm typing it out, I'm like, oh no, it's finally happened. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. My brain has suddenly exited my body.
Yeah, we've gotten so far into this weird world where words don't have me. And not even like a cool like Roland Barthes semiotic sign signifier kind of way. It's just in a like, I don't know, I guess words, you know? I guess you just say whatever and people just have to deal with it. And that's the
It reminds me, and this is not the first time recently this has come up. I don't know if you're a Star Trek person, a Trekkie, as they affectionately are called.
I like some of the Star Treks very much.
There is an episode, Next Generation, where Picard runs in. Well, I guess he beams down to the planet. He doesn't run onto it. That would be a hard time.
It's a different episode. He
gets onto this planet, and there's this race of peoples who they speak through meme.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like that's us now. I feel like this is where we are. This is where we live. If I could speak constantly through GIF, that is what I would do. I would never speak words again. You would never hear my voice ever again. It would be all GIFs all day.
It'd make the podcast harder, I'll say that.
Yes. But you know, we live in a modern age. With technology. Technologif.
Yeah, there's the new podcast title.
Done.
We figured it out.
One, this makes me think too. I was scrolling through Facebook a little bit ago, and I came across somebody had posted, I guess it was from another social media site, and it said, aliens, greetings, me. Oh hey, aliens, are you not shocked? Me. Man, I got a lot going on.
I mean, it's funny. So we just did, myself and my partner and our friend did just go out and do like a contactee sort of experiment with something. We don't know what it was, but it was the same sort of thing where you're just like, you're talking to something and there's a part of you that's like, I feel like I should feel weirder about this, right? I feel like I should potentially be more on edge, but I don't know what we're talking to, but we're just kind of talking to something, huh?
I feel like I feel very much there because you have this experience. You're potentially talking to the spirits or some other sort of entity. And then you're like, man, I just did my taxes and I don't know what is happening to me right now. where are these dividends going? Like, I don't understand any of this.
Yeah. It's just a very like, hey, is it cool? Are you, can I get to where you are? Otherworldly thing. Can we go over there? Cause it's bad here. Actually.
It's gotten to the point to me where I kind of have been shying away from keeping on top of stuff because I'm really just trying to hold on to those last threads of sanity that I feel like I have.
It's hard.
It is. You know, I go onto Reddit and I look at raccoons in drawers.
That sounds pretty cool, though. It's great. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. Like, and by drawers, I mean like, you know, like a kitchen drawer, like somebody taps on it and then it like unfurls itself. It opens the drawer and pops out and like waves. Yeah.
Amazing.
I
do love a raccoon. I'm a big fan of the possums. Possums are very good.
Possums are highly underrated.
Super underrated. Absolutely.
They eat tens of thousands of ticks. I hate ticks. And I will go on record as saying it. I do not stand for ticks. I do not endorse them.
Don't like them. Don't
I think they're awful.
Yeah.
And true story. One time I was lying in bed, a sacred space.
Yeah.
A space where you would expect to be safe from the horrors of the outside world. And I felt
no ticks allowed. Yeah.
I felt something. I live in a city, by the way. This is also very important to the story. I feel something. And I look down and lo and behold, on the back of my knee, a tick. And I start screaming. I start screaming as if I am literally being murdered. And then at that moment, my husband comes running in because because I sound like I'm being murdered.
Sure. Yeah.
He's like, what's going on? And I can't really vocalize what is happening.
No, it's hard.
It all comes out as like, get it off of me, get it off of me. And I'm vaguely gesturing toward my leg.
Sure.
And, he's like, okay, is there a match? Is there a lighter? And I'm just like, I rise in pitch and like volume. And so he's just like, you know, and so he manages to get it off. Luckily, the entire thing, then it's off. And I'm still, I am throwing.
Yeah.
Fit. I am
good.
Weaving around. I am the wacky arm inflatable man. Like who just got like shanked, you know, so I'm
everywhere. Yeah. You're deflating.
I'm deflating. He leaves the room and then he comes back amid my cries of fear and abject horror. And he says to me, I called an ambulance.
That's maybe unnecessary. That one.
I go from 100 to zero real fast.
Yeah.
And I'm screaming. And then I was like, you did what?
Yeah, no, that's an expensive phone call is that one.
Well,
that's a phone call costs a lot of money. How much that phone call costs?
So it was like I didn't know if it was a spider. I didn't know if you were actually dying, and I was like, "Oh my god, you did what?" And then I hear the siren coming.
Yeah.
And then there's a knock on the door, and then in walk two paramedics and a cop, and they walk into my house, and I'm just ashen. At this point, now I'm mortified.
Yeah.
And the cop is standing there and he has no expression.
Sure.
One of the medics is standing there, no expression. And the other one, bless him, he is like, well, you know, this looks like a tick bite. You know, my wife and I, we have a house in the country. You know, we get this a lot. You just keep an eye on it. You'll be okay. And I'm like, And they leave. And I'm just like, oh, my Lord. I did find out later it was a Lone Star tick, and they don't have Lyme disease. They have something worse.
Oh no!
You would know right away, though. You would be
okay. Good.
It would be very bad. But the story does not end there, though, because 2 years later, he was driving away, and this he was keeping papers and fell off the top of his car.
Sure.
And
yeah.
Someone turned it into the police department, and so they called and they're like, hey. Someone turned something in that belongs to you guys. You should come by and get it. So I joined and we both went there, and it was late. It was a slow night. We go in there. He's filling out the paperwork to get this item back.
Sure.
And there's
one
cop there who's just staring at us. And then after a moment of silence, he says, how long have you lived at this address? Have you lived there a few years? Did you once call about a tick?
Yeah.
And
you're the
like,
tick people. You're the tick ones.
And then he goes, he was like, that's me. I was on that call. I was like, oh, yay. And he was
it's
like,
a reunion.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, oh, yeah, no, it's totally fine. There was, you know, one time we had to fix our sink and I got the wrong part. And I'm like, that's not the same thing at all. That is that is not the same thing.
Pretty different, actually.
Yeah. So anyway, the paranormal.
The strange.
The strange. Yeah. So this experience, I remember you telling me a bit about this. So you were using a spirit box. Yes.
So we were looking, for something that's sort of like a something like a location or an area around here, sort of near where we were, that would be a good just investigation point. We're trying to find something that we thought would be like a good place to go. And I pull up this fort. There's an abandoned artillery fort near us, like a 40-minute drive away. And it's just like, it's covered in graffiti and it looks extremely cool. And just like nature has like overtaken it. And it's like a national park now.
Mm.
And we're like, this is the place. We got to go here. It also had a couple of the things that people reported seeing tie into a different investigation that I've been sort of like long-term researching and sort of not exactly, we haven't gone out into the field for that one yet, but it's, I've been like researching it.
Yeah.
And so there are a couple of like little alignments and little like sort of like small S synchronicities that are like little connections that connect it to the way that I've been thinking. And so I was like, all right, that's the one, that's where we're going. And so what I brought, I've got a bunch of stuff that's like, I've got some, you know, some lav mics and stuff just for that. I was like, I don't really even necessarily want to film this one. I kind of just want to go out, do some of the communication stuff, set intention, just sort of play around in the space a little bit with that. And so we go out and it's incredible. And it looks so cool. And just like when you're pulling up and it's just like, this is this huge base, but it's like the trees and everything's growing over and there's birds flying around everywhere. And it just feels very like. I remember seeing
some pictures that you posted. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We posted, it's a really cool looking space. It's just artillery base where like you can just fucking walk into it. Like you can just walk into this underground like area and just like explore. And so we're in there with flashlights and we found a little space that felt really like charged. And you could just kind of like feel like this feels like the space to try to reach out or whatever.
Yeah.
And I had brought a little mandarin orange, which is an orange that I like very much. And we just sort of did like a little like peace offering, like, hey, you know, we brought you something nice and sweet, whatever you are, this is a thing that I like, hopefully you'll like it as well. And then we set intentions. So, you know, a lot of like, you know, we're not coming here to like do an expose, or we're not coming here to like shine a light and see who you are. We're just sort of here to talk. We're curious about what it even is that they're to talk to here. We're sort of, again, just intention setting, letting us know this is like, mm-hmm. We're approaching this from a position of respect, from a position of like mutual respect. And then the important thing, and this is something that I've seen, there are some witches that I like a lot and they talk a lot about this, but the one important rule is to be like, and also this is a communication that exists in this space and does not get to follow us home. Like this is your space that you live in and where you exist. And we are going to go back to our space and our world where we're from. And nothing is invited to or allowed to follow us there. Mm-hmm. Just like, again, just like intention setting stuff, setting rules, setting boundaries. Setting
boundaries, yeah.
That's the thing. You know, you got to set emotional boundaries with people. Mm-hmm. You got to set emotional boundaries with spirits. So it's the legit. Same, yeah, no, it's the same stuff. And so we did. And so we did something called the Estes Method. And the Estes Method is pioneered by Carl Pfeiffer and Connor Randall from the Spirits of Stanley and from Hellier. I think they came up with it when they were working on Spirits of Stanley. When they were the like in-house paranormal investigation team for the Stanley Hotel, which is the hotel that The Shining is based off of. It was very cool.
Yes. Very interesting.
Yeah, really interesting place. I think it's called like Estes Park or something, and that's why they named it the Estes Method. But the way that the experiment goes is because you know the thing with the spirit box is normally, so a spirit box for any listeners who don't know what a spirit box is, it's a device that sort of scans quickly through AM or FM signals, and you want to set it to a certain like anywhere between 100 and 200. On the setting, I think it's like megahertz or kilohertz. I don't know. It flips through. And so the idea is if there's anything, whether it is the spirit of a person once living or any sort of other entity, mm-hmm. it's able to communicate with you through the words that you can sort of make out through the thing. Now, the problem with it a lot of times is that there's a lot of like confirmation bias that goes into it. You ask a question, and so everyone's thinking about the answer. And so to get around that, what Connor and Carl did that is super cool is they came up with this method where one person wears a set of like isolation headphones, like drummer headphones, and they plug directly in. So they're the only person who can hear the spirit box. Mm-hmm. And they also get a blindfold. So they're completely like sensory cut off. They can only experience the spirit box. And then other people ask questions that they can't hear. And you see if you can have a sort of conversation in that way. So the person answering the questions cannot hear the questions. They can only hear the spirit box. So we did this experiment. And there were three of us, so each of us sort of took a turn doing it. And it was really, really cool. Like, it started off like a little bit spooky, just a little bit, where we, I was asking like, you know, hi, you know, we don't know who even we're necessarily reaching out to. We just want to talk. And I said, I was like, I've heard that there is sort of like a canid or canine sort of spirit here. Cause that was in the description. It was like, there's a, like a big black dog spirit that shows up sometimes. Now the interesting thing about the black dog spirit is specifically, black dog is, like a, as a death omen in like British or English, mysticism or whatever. And I've been having a lot of thoughts about death omens specifically, just because the number 4 has been popping up a lot for me lately.
Okay.
And as you know, or maybe you don't, you probably know, in Korean and I think also Chinese superstition, 4 is a death number because it sounds like the word for death. And so I've been having 4 pop up a lot lately. And my instinct with something like that is like, ooh, 4, spooky, bad number, whatever. But the interesting thing about it is 4 has been popping up in good ways. Like it's been attached to like good synchronicities or good alignments and stuff. And I've been in a lot of tarot stuff that I've been doing with some people. I've been getting a lot of messaging about breaking cycles and sort of changing trajectory based on like what we think we have to do and where we come from. And I was thinking a lot about like, maybe I need to evolve past this concept of the number 4. And not to say that it doesn't mean death, but to say that maybe death isn't this scary thing, right? Death doesn't have to be a thing that we fear conceptually.
Well, and I love the idea too of death being the idea of a transition, you know,
because totally. It's a liminal space. Yeah, absolutely.
No one knows, you know, until you die, you don't know. True. So the idea of transitioning from one state to another, from one thing to another, you know, and even
totally
death of self, death of
absolutely death of the ego. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about, like evolving this concept of death in my own mind. Right. And this idea of moving past, obviously, I'm doing a bunch of stuff here and I'm going to try to avoid it as best I can. But this like fear of it, there's a difference between saying like, and it's like wild animals, right? Like I'm going to try to avoid a bear just because I think it's probably best for me to avoid a bear.
I feel like I can empathize with that strongly.
But I'm not, but I think if I'm like, oh, bears, there's bears, you know, I'm scared of bears. That's, you know, there's two ways to look at it, right?
And right,
I think I'm going to do my best to avoid death, but I think just sort of this it's the scariest thing we have to watch out for it is not necessarily good or healthy. And so I've been thinking about death omens and I've been thinking about like, and I've gotten in the sort of the tarot stuff I've been doing, had that confirmed, this idea of like, yeah, it's okay to like break that cycle, get rid of that superstition, move past that. Like we can move past the things that are restricting our existence, I think. So I was like, all right, death omen, cool. Let's go and let's figure it out. And so I started asking about this dog spirit. And the person plugged in, who's my partner, said something like, be scared. And I was like, we were like, whoops. Yeah. And I started talking about other stuff like a pink triangle and a home. And pink triangle is obviously queer iconography in a really interesting way. And so me and the person asking, is a different friend of ours, we're like, all right, let's pull my partner out of the Estes and just talk to them and just sort of see how they were feeling. And they let us know that like the scared stuff felt less like a command to be scared and more of like, hey, I think you might be scared right now. This is like chill. It's cool. Everything's fine. It's very calm. And they felt super calm. And we're like, okay, well, maybe this doesn't like want us to leave. Maybe this is just like, it's just like figuring out who we are and like if we're scared and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I plug into it next. And I guess I just started the stuff that I was saying. And I didn't, obviously, I don't know if I was going to hear the questions, but they were asking about like what this was. What are they talking to? And I guess the things that I was saying was like, I was talking about eggs and flying north and just like bird stuff and animal stuff and like the sea and all the sort of nature, like from the perspective almost of like multiple different animals. And they were like, really like, okay, well tell us about like what you're doing. And I was like flying north, I have to fly north, all this stuff. And so like, it felt, what we've sort of figured out was whatever we were talking to was sort of existing and embodying like different animal behaviors, like just animals existing, which is interesting because very specifically, like several cool, weird birds like flew near and landed near us when we were like sort of exploring the space. And so we had already encountered a lot of like interesting birds. And a thing that a friend of mine, Ryan Singer, really funny comic and also has a podcast called Me and Paranormal You, just funny cool guy, has a app that he's making. It's like a crystal IDing app. It's a whole thing.
Oh wow. I love that.
But I was talking to him and what he pointed out that I thought was really interesting was if you walk into a space thinking about death omens and the idea of death and finality and ending and all these things, and the image, so the words that I started saying weren't just birds, but I was talking about eggs and egg and finding eggs. And then the third person, our friend, popped in and they were also talking about eggs and stuff. And eggs are a fairly universal symbol of life and birth and rebirth.
Yeah,
and so it's this idea that it's this, again, like you were saying, like it's transitionary, right? And I think there's sort of the duality of like death omen, life omen, like death symbol, living, like birth, creation, all of these things. It was really, really interesting. And by the end of it, we just sort of had this really cool, interesting talk where it just sort of felt like the cool one at the very end is the third person started talking about like testing and experiment and like all these things. And I realized like, yeah, we're testing out this equipment. Like this is our first big Estes method.
Yeah.
And it was very much like this thing acknowledging like, oh, you're just learning how to do this. You're just learning how to talk. And it felt like it was like waking up. You know what I mean? It felt like a thing waking up and coming to this conversation and not really knowing it. By the end of it, it was super inviting. It was telling us like, come sit, like come and sit, like kept popping up.
Wow.
So it was really, really cool, really interesting thing.
Yeah.
I think we got lucky meeting something very like kind and cool and patient our first time out. And I think the most interesting thing about it for me is I had a weekend where I just didn't get a lot of sleep. I didn't get a lot of sleep last weekend. And so I've just been like, my body's just been like tired and I've been out of it and just like kind of zonked. And we walk out of these tunnels into the sunlight and I'm just hit, like as soon as we're done and we're like close on, I'm hit with this wave of like I feel like I just woke up from like a 10-hour sleep. I just feel rested and rejuvenated and like exiting this thing, just feeling like completely like full of like life, right? This idea full of like, not like manic, whatever energy, but just like I felt like I had been like refueled. You know what I mean? It was really, really interesting coming away from this experience. Like not only having a cool, interesting, weird conversation with something that I don't know what it is, but also just feeling replenished entirely after that. So it was cool. It was really cool. I'm sure they won't all be as cool as that, but right, that was a pretty cool experience in terms of running the Estes Method Spirit Box experiment.
That is so very incredible, you know, and especially for this first time doing it, going out. And a couple things that I immediately notice on even just your approach going out with it, you know, having brought these little oranges.
Yeah.
Because I feel like most times when, you know, people see in media and things like this, the paranormal exploration and popular stuff, you see people going up in there and they're very yelly. They're very
yelly ghosts a lot. Yeah.
You know, they go up in there and I've heard this on, I feel like, a couple different podcasts before, and I felt this with myself. Listen, if I'm hanging out in my own home, as it were, and somebody busts up in there and starts yelling at me, I'm not going to be in a great mood.
No, of course not.
And they're just like, who are you? I'm like, who the fuck are you? What are you doing in my house?
Not only is it root of something's physical space, but it's also like, it is extremely, like, I hate to use this word if it's incorrect, but it feels extremely colonial. It feels like a colonial look at investigation, in that it's very much declaring like, you're going to come talk to me right now because I'm demanding it and I am the thing that is existing in this space. And it feels like how we've treated nature. It feels like, not we, I mean humanity, and specifically like, you know, the people in this country. I feel like it's the way that we've treated nature. It's the way that we've treated indigenous people. It's the way that we've sort of treated this whole world, of just like demanding attention, demanding space, demanding ownership. And it feels very othering. And I think that's part of it. A lot of times people sort of think, and this is the thing that our friend we brought along with us, who doesn't really have any experience with paranormal stuff. And so this was like a brand new experience for them.
Oh, wow.
They were like, the thing that they kept coming back to as we were driving away was like, I thought it was going to be scary. I thought this was going to be like something mean or mean-spirited or dark, mm-hmm. because that's how it's portrayed. And this sort of the paranormal is extremely othered in our media and in our films. And it's something that I feel like, you know, we as marginalized people are also very othered. And I think that's something mm-hmm. that we share. And I think that it's an interesting, and that, you know, this sort of, this aligns, and we've talked about this, this aligns with other thoughts that I've had and sort of some projects that we're working on to explore this sort of more in depth. But I think, you know, I don't know how, and you know, obviously there are negative hauntings and there's bad stuff that happens. There are negative entities out there. But I also wonder, you know, I wonder how many things get told the way they get told and result in, you know, that's the story that exists. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was something I was curious on, because we have spoken about this before, talking about a little bit more too, is the idea of approaching the paranormal from not only the perspective of someone who has experienced what it's like to be marginalized, but from the perspective of looking through a historical lens of what the context is of what's going on here, you know? Like, I feel like at least in the space that we're in now, as far as witch trials of the past and things, we're at least in a more knowledgeable space to be able to look back and be like, oh, I see that this person was called a witch. I also see that their neighbor really wanted that land they were sitting on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
And how many of these paranormal experiences, when you go beyond that, like, oh, they're so evil. Also, you know, also that land was looking mighty tasty, or, you know, also it had to do with these persons who were native persons or that mm-hmm. had to do with a marginalized population and things.
Yeah.
Like that.
Or, you know, and this is a thing that there's a book called Transgender Warriors by Leslie Feinberg. That's a great read and really interesting. And mm-hmm. Z talks about in that book the ways that the church in some of its oppression of various villagers and people sort of accused them of paganism and all of these things that were connected not just to, you know, quote unquote witchcraft, but were more connected to matrilineal societies and more connected to societies that were more socialist or sort of communist, communal in general than the sort of the but also it's interesting when you start looking into where this fear of paganism comes from, right? And like, mm-hmm. you know, it is harder to control, absolutely. It's but it's interesting. It's interesting how stories get told. You know, the thing that I point out to people is like, you know, you hear witches or monsters or whatever, and you get this negative, sort of this knee-jerk negative reaction. But think about Scar, the villain from The Lion King. Mm-hmm. Scar is an effeminate, slinky, non-bulky lion whose entire goal is to destroy the nuclear family. Scar is played with arched eyebrows and limp wrists, and Scar is extremely gay coded, and I'm obviously not the person to pioneer this idea. And then look at Ursula is, look at how Ursula is coded, literally to look like drag queens, literally to look like drag queens. And I think when you think about this idea of the, you know, the othering of the paranormal, it is in line with how we've been othered, historically as you know, queer people. I mean, you can even scope it out, like how you look at old, you know, World War II era Bugs Bunny cartoons that are extremely racist against Asian people. And you look at other cartoons that are from before World War II that are extremely racist against Asian people or any marginalized group. And, you know, the media portrayal of the other is not just, you know, it's not just monsters. It's people who are being sold to the world as monsters. And it's something, it's very interesting how we sort of, how we fit into that. And again, this is like, this is stuff that I've thought a lot about because, you know, there's a big project that I've been working on that I've talked to you about that I'm being slightly hush hush about.
but stay tuned.
But it's all related. And I think the more sort of open and holistic we can be as we think about how to approach not just the paranormal, but just the normal too, and how we think about animals, right? And how we think about hunting and all this. I'm not, you know, I'm not a vegetarian. I eat meat sometimes, but I try to, you know, have it be sustainably sourced and all that stuff. And I just think, you know, the way we approach the world, I think could use
more kindness, more empathy.
absolutely. And more understanding. Mm-hmm. And less of a assumption that something's out to get us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I mean, exactly what you said about things being monsters, but people, I would venture even to say, no, they were being sold as monsters. they just happened to be people.
That's what, absolutely.
You know, and I've been on a panel that I've repeated a couple times at a couple different comic conventions about villainesses. And even when you go back to pretty old fairy tales and things like that, if you look at a lot of the older villainesses from different stories, you know, you find they are women who are independent, women who are financially on their own, women who embody something, you know, some may say vain, some may say, you know, happy with their looks. Some may too sexy or too interested in sex. All of these things that don't align with the idea of a nice domicile wife type.
Totally.
And but that's what gets vilified in these stories. If you don't want to be this, you simmer down a little bit.
It's propaganda, basically.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Kind of going back to your own spirit box thing, the thing also that and I go back to this orange thing because the first thing I thought about when you mentioned that was I remember when I had visited Korea when I was, I think, about 15 with my mother, I happened to go with her on, it was my grandfather's Memorial Day, which is the anniversary of the day he died. So I went with her to his gravesite. And one of the things you do is you make an offering at the gravesite. And, you know, you would generally bring like a persimmon and like a little bit of soju, you know, and then you clean off the gravesite and stuff like that. But the idea of bringing fruit, I think, is a very, I feel like it's very Asian based.
Totally,
offering type of thing. Even this idea of bringing a gift for me, you know, as gifts being one of my love languages, that makes total sense, you know. But the idea of offering something, I feel like, is a very non-Western kind of thinking that makes complete sense to me, though, as opposed to what you said about it being a more colonial idea of, I have the right to your time. I deserve this. You know, it is mine because I claim it, you know, and not giving any consideration to whatever might be there of, you know, what are your feelings? What are your desires? What is the space that you are in now that I'm in this space that is your space?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it has a lot to do with, it has a lot to do with respect. And it's interesting to think about it from the lens of like Asianness and ancestry, only because I have a lot of thoughts about how deeply harmful and toxic the notion of filial piety that I was raised with and that a lot of my other Asian kids that I knew growing up were raised with. And I have a lot of thoughts about sort of this idea of owed respect and older generations and so on. But I also do think that that isn't to say that you don't approach a new situation or whatever with sort of, again, an offering of respect. Just in terms of like, and it's, you know, it's not, I would say it's also, you know, it goes to even like older, you know, older pre-Christian religions. Like if you think about how the Greeks, you know, would give offerings to their various deities. And I think it's very, very shared. I feel like on the Asian side of things, it does tend to be more like offerings to like to people who have passed and sort of its respect in that. And I think there's something that we understood as people, as a race of beings in the past, that it's, there's something important about being able to give something up that we might have otherwise used. And whether it's, you know, whether it's someone making art in the sand or whether it's, you know, monks making paintings with yak butter that's going to melt. And there's something about like creating, creating or giving something that is even just the universe or whatever, even if you don't believe in anything extra normal, even if you don't believe in anything paranormal, this idea of letting something go, even if you don't believe it's going to someone or something, I think there's something powerful about saying like, this was mine and now it's gone. And it's not like I gave it to someone to get something back. I just gave this away. And I think there's potentially value in that as well. I went all over the place with that. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
I love that idea though. This idea of even exchange, the exchange of I've put something of myself out there so that maybe not now, maybe not for any specific situation, but that I may yet receive in the future, you know, or even without the idea of putting it out with the expectation of receiving, like I have received in the past, I have received good things. I am putting out there to put back into, you know, feed into the life that we live, the world that we are imbuing, you know, this kind of reciprocal nature of life, the journey we're all on, you know,
the push and pull of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, even when it does come to, you know, the paranormal and these interactions and things like that, I feel like there are elements of this idea of giving in, even if that's some amount of like an energy that you give to help get back, you know, and even in exchanges with people, if you have a connection with somebody, if you have a relationship on any level, you know, you put in and you get back. Yeah. And, you know, it's not like, well, hopefully you're not keeping a notebook with a tally. Or
like, that'd be weird. I mean, I've met people like that.
It probably is not healthy. That's probably not a healthy way to do it.
No, it's not how you want to. It's not how you want to be cruising. I mean, even like, I mean, this is a thing that like I always say, you know, you go out to eat with friends and someone's like, oh, how much was this? And how much was this? And I don't know. I'm always like, I'll even out. Everything I would say, if everyone is acting in good faith, I think everything tends to even out. I think sometimes when people are not acting in good faith and those people are, you know, capitalists or in charge of the world, stuff doesn't even out on a big scale unless everyone's acting in good faith. But I think at least on the smaller level of interpersonal stuff, like as long as everyone, you know, I think it all evens out. Or I would like to think that it all evens out at the very least.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think at the very least, we on personal levels are generally able to keep people around us with whom things are able to even out and at least get to a point. A lot of the time with certain people where it's like, I noticed it hasn't evened out with you. I'm going to go ahead and create some distance there. We'll see when that helps.
And again, there's setting boundaries, right? Setting boundaries with the people around us, setting boundaries with the various extra normal entities that we come into contact with.
It's being in that space, being like, hey, here is a man in orange. I'm going to talk to you right here. But when I go home, I expect no faces in the mirrors. I expect cabinets to be opening and closing. Like this is not an invitation to have my socks floating above my head.
You stay in this artillery base. This is where you live.
This is
or wherever else you go. That's not my home.
You know, I mean, listen, like you want to come to my house and bring me man in orange. Maybe we'll talk. until we're done talking,
that'd be wild.
Which I don't know. I mean, I think about that, and like if it was reversed, and I'm hanging out in my space, and suddenly, you know, I do collect skulls and bones and stuff like that. If a skull just materialized and got set nicely on the floor, and I just hear something being like, "Yo, you want to have a conversation?" I guess I'm in.
I would for sure too. I'd for sure, you know, for me, it'd be like, "Hey, here's new Pokemon Snap, and we brought it to you." And it's
you want to talk for a while? Like, let's see where this goes. But then, of course, you would also hear like, cool, "Hey, you can't follow me after that. You're not allowed to come."
Yeah, no, you can't come.
I don't want you following me in my special place.
into my extra dimensional home, which is fine.
That's my special place. That's the Pokemon there aren't for you.
There's probably some cool ones over there that I don't even know about.
That's where I would imagine all the most special of the Pokemon are. Thank you so much for joining me on all of this. Where can all of the amazing people find you? Where can people haunt you?
People can find me
That's on not Twitter. Your house.
That's not my house. Well, Twitter's mostly in my house. Oh, okay. That's the bridge. That's allowed. At Dash Kwiatkowski on Twitter. I'm at Dash VGC on Twitch. I haven't been streaming lately just because I've been just doing other things, but I do stream stuff on there. I had a Nuzlocke going for a while. Yeah, mostly just Twitter. Mostly Twitter is the best place to keep updated on what I'm doing with my life, at Dash Kwiatkowski. And and you know, if you're out at like a weird old abandoned artillery base or something, you might run into me, I guess. That's always a possibility.
If someone were to bring an offering out and turn around, you'd be there.
I'll hang out. We can chop it up. We can talk through a box. That's fine.
Yeah, I've done a spirit box, so I'm ready to.
Maybe we should do one.
Hey, listen, I'm on the road again. I'm fully vaxxed. I'm ready to start rocking and rolling. I've driven up to New York too. I made it in one day. That's
a long drive.
It was a very long drive. Yeah,
that's too long. That's too. I think about when I was young and I could just drive for 20 hours and be fine. And that's just it seems like such a long time ago. Yeah, 7-8 hours in the car and I'm sleepy.
I start streaming at like 5 p.m. and I get to 6. I'm like, oh, look at the time. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, what is it, like 3 a.m. now? What is going on here? But yeah, thank you so much for joining. Yeah, I will, for everybody, again, if you want to check out the video footage of this fantastic interview with this amazing human being, go over to the Patreon, patreon.com/rocketfox. You can see that and get all the other bonus content for Fantastically Strange over there for merely $1 a month. It is a steal. Less than a hamburger. Well, depending on where you go. But also, if you would like to follow the podcast on all of the places, you can. We got it on Instagram, Facebook, Fantastic Odd Pod on Twitter. Sometimes I even keep it updated. And you can send me email at info@fantasticallystrange.com. If you have any topics you'd like to see covered, just to say hello. I love hearing from people. And yeah, just to reach out, I would love to hear from you. I am super excited that in July, the weekend of the 10th, I'm going to be moderating and vending at Witches Fest USA, which is going to be both virtual and in person in New York. And if you want to find out more about that, you can go to witchesfestusa.org, check it out. And I will have all of the links to that, including all the ways you can follow and consensually haunt the Magnificent Dash on the show info on the website. So be sure to check it out. Thank you so much for joining. And once again, Dash, thank you so much. And yeah.
Yeah, thank you for having me. But yeah, biting bugs like are obsessed with biting me specifically more than anyone. Yeah, maybe it's just maybe it's just like a mixed race thing.
I think it's the biracial thing. I really think. Yeah. We're just too awesome.
We taste too good.